And good morning. We're now at 10 minutes before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. And joining me, as he usually does, is Arts Editor Jared Bowen. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, today we start out with a Stephen Sondheim classic.
A Little Night Music, which I just saw A Little Night Music last night when it opened at the Huntington Theater Company. And this is playing through October 11th. Bob, this is a really fantastic show. It's really a resplendent rumination on relationships and love. This is his piece from the 1970s that, first of all, it's just a clever piece, as most Sondheim pieces are. It's very clever in that it's surrounded by these notions of three. There are three main couples we find in love and intersecting love. Its music is in three-quarter time, so much of it is presented as a waltz. But it opens with this concept of this grandmother telling her granddaughter, the night smiles three times. It smiles on the young, it smiles on the fools, and it smiles on the old. And so we see this transpire over the course of this short time as old loves and new loves come back together. It's also an extremely funny piece, but it centers on two characters, Frederick and Desiree Armfeldt. And Desiree is somewhat of an aging actress in the early 1900s, very, very popular, but really taking stock of her life when she encounters Frederick, a former love, and they come back together. And we see what happens from there. A Little Night Music is also the show that gives us this song. Now, a lot of people, I think, I will tip my hat here to say that this is one of my favorite songs. This is one of my absolute favorite shows of all time. And for people who only know Send in the Clowns from the more than 900 covers that have been done, from everybody from Judy Collins to Cher, if you don't see the show and know the song in context, you don't really understand it. You have Desiree singing to Frederick. She's exposed herself, basically, in that she wants to rekindle their romance. And she's telling him this is it for her. This is the time that she needs him. And it doesn't go so well. These are the notions that come across in those lyrics. And it's so painful. And it is exquisitely rendered in this production here. You just feel her pain. It's just wrought with emotion. A terrific performance by Hayden Gwynn. But this is directed by Peter Dubois, the Huntington's artistic director. And I talked to him recently about Stephen Sondheim and what he's able to do in song and music.
I think of Sondheim as our generation's Shakespeare, as the Shakespeare of our lifetime. And in the same way that Shakespeare gives you so much information in his verse, Sondheim gives you so much information in his music. So as the music takes these twists and turns, you can feel the emotional twists and turns that the character is meant to take, that the scene's meant to take.
And I will tell you that as much as I know this show and love this music, what I also really appreciated about this production, which first of all is just really, really gorgeous, gorgeously staged, is that Peter Dubois really mines the comedy here and makes it very funny in assembling an extremely talented cast.
All right, a great opportunity to see a true classic at the Huntington Theater. Next, the Dream Machines of Theo Jansson, better known as Strand Beast.
Yes, many people know about the Strand Beast. I was a little bit late to the party on this one because they are a viral sensation. These Strand Beasts from this Dutch artist, I'll correct you, it's actually Theo Jansson.
Oh, yes, okay.
And he, about 25 years ago, he's a former landscape painter, of course, painting those great Dutch landscapes. He had this notion of these creatures that could save humanity by building up beaches and shorelines. This is, again, 25 years ago, before we really started having this conversation about coastal erosion. So he devised these strand beasts made largely out of zip ties and PVC pipes. And now they are this extraordinary sensation around the world. And then they are these figures that move only by wind and by human touch. I spoke to Trevor Smith recently. He's the curator at the Peabody Essex Museum, where you can see the Dream Machines on view through January 3rd, about why they enchant people the way they do. And I will tell you that, Bob, when I moved one of the Strand Beasts, I even felt like I had somewhat of an emotional experience.
The dream of the Strand Beast is so unlikely, the idea of kind of making a life form out of PVC tubes. And yet, it is. It is alive. And you feel it as it moves. And yet, when you kind of watch it move, you still can't quite understand it. It remains something just out of reach.
Well, you know, when you see them, you never forget them, though.
You don't. It's a very interesting thing that he's done, because you're really looking at a pile of plastic at the end of the day. But when you see them move, they move very much like animals, and so you can't help but have this connection to them, and especially knowing what their creator has thought about them. And it's turned into this interesting phenomenon where Theo Jansson has created this DNA sequence so that these beasts can be recreated. He's released it out into the world, so now there are mutant strand beasts that pop up, but you can YouTube them and find them everywhere. And it's basically his notion that he's leaving a species behind after he leaves the planet.
I'm curious if they're still stopping eroding beaches or not. We should check that out.
Yes.
Of course, now we are the much-anticipated review of Black Mass from Jared Bowen. Jared, what's your take on this notorious film?
Yeah, well, of course, Black Mass is the new film about Whitey Bulger that just premiered in Boston with a big splashy red carpet premiere this week. And this tells the story of Whitey Bulger's rise to power in Boston. It picks up in 1975, a few years after he was released from Alcatraz, returns to South Boston, and forms a relationship with the FBI, most notably with the agent John Connolly. And John Connolly is somebody who grew up with Whitey Bulger, so already felt himself emerged in the South Boston culture, and they had mutual interests. James Whitey Bulger's interest was in having a criminal enterprise by wiping out the Angiulo family, which really had a hold on gangster activity in Boston. John Connolly thought if he could take down the Angiulo family with Whitey Bulger as an informant, then he would rise to the top levels of the FBI. So we see this swath of life right until Whitey eventually flees. Whitey, of course, is played by Johnny Depp. Bob, I will tell you, I'm a bit close to this because I have covered a lot of this story. I worked with Emily Rooney.
That's
we
right.
covered a lot of this for years and years and years. I actually did a great piece, but I did a half-hour documentary with Dick Lair, who is one of the authors, along with Gerard O'Neill, of Black Mass. I wasn't as captivated by this film as I thought I might be. I think technically it's a very good film. Johnny Depp gives a good performance. It's well shot, but it wasn't stuff that I could sink my teeth into. And I'm quite honestly still a little uncomfortable with this notion of turning this horrific crime spree and criminal enterprise into a blockbuster film. But as I said, I'm close to it. I will tell you, I talked to Dick Lair. He was walking the red carpet, and I asked him about what it was like to help out on this movie, advise on this film, and see Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger. And I will say I did this on the red carpet, so it was a little bit noisy there.
It was disorienting and also creepy, because he was occupying some middle ground between Johnny himself and the role he was playing between takes or something. The whole body language was still Whitey, the swagger, the look.
I also talked to the director, Scott Cooper, and Johnny Depp did incense some of the family's some of the victim's family members by saying that he could not completely understand the evil characterization of Whitey Bulger. But I asked the director, Scott Cooper, about how he tried to handle the sensitivity of what had happened here by turning it into a film.
Jimmy Bulger's exploits still have left this emotional wound in the city of Boston. I didn't in any way want to glamorize or romanticize or glorify anything that he did. I just tried to, and I wasn't even making a gangster picture, but I was trying to make a human picture.
All right, so that's Black Mass, and it opens, I guess, tomorrow everywhere, huh?
Yeah, it's in theaters everywhere.
Okay, now quickly, tomorrow night, Open Studio.
I just talked about them. You can see the strand beasts moving in person. We have an interview with Israel Horovitz, who has a new play, Gloucester Blue, at the Gloucester Stage Company.
Wow, okay, that's tomorrow night, 8:30, WGBH2. Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Bob.